I don't know. Robbie, did you have these guys stand up? If you were in Project last summer, would you guys stand up? Most of you guys are here. That's awesome. And if you've done Project before, even if it wasn't last summer, if you've been in Project, would you stand up too? Yeah, check that out. See, this is good. This is good stuff. You guys can sit down. Thank you. So Project was just full of experience. You know, it was kind of like, when you're in college, it's real life. Okay, it's real because you're in it, you're doing it. But it's not going to look like what your life will look like in 5 years or 10 years. And Project is a little closer to what real life or later life, I'll say, might look like for you. You probably know kind of about Project, and you're gonna hear a little more, learn more about the specifics of it. But basically, we lived together on a college campus. The students that were there all went out and looked for jobs, hundreds and hundreds of job applications, right, guys? Individually hundreds of job applications. Hard work, interviews, rejection, day after day. Those first several weeks were brutal for a lot of people. And real life is brutal. When you get done with college, life turns out to be kind of brutal. And if you don't have people around you, it's going to be really difficult. I've just been talking with some of our staff about enduring, what it really looks like to stay walking with Christ, following Christ, being a Christian with a family, with a full-time job. All those things, it gets increasingly, there's more pressure that gets put on us through life. And we have to have community. That's the way we were designed. And so what I loved about this summer was we got to live the way that we were designed to live. We lived in community. And we had, you know, the people that, like, the students and other staff that were there really supported my wife and I and our kids, supported Robbie and Mary and their kids. They watched kids for us so that we could have dates and work on our marriage. Turns out those things are important in life. There was just the joy of being together, the encouragement of coming back from work, and it was like a really hard day. I don't know if you've had that experience. Even campus ministers have really hard days. And when you come back and there's people that can be with you and pray with you and just encourage you, it's just amazing. And so there was 40 of us just living together and living this way in the type of community that we were designed to be in, and yet not isolated, not cloistered away, but with the intention and the vision of going out and making an impact in the people that we worked with, in the neighborhood where we lived. It was just really exciting. A couple of verses that come to mind to me when I think about it are 1 Peter 3:15, and some of you guys maybe know this. Where is it here? Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you about the hope that you have, yet with gentleness and respect. And so that was part of what we got to experience together, was people going out and getting jobs and learning, how do I have a spiritual conversation at work with someone who is very against everything that I live for, or is just really struggling with life and really having a hard time? How can I encourage them and show them Christ in that? That was really cool to see what that looked like. Also, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 is a really good picture of Project Impact. In verse 8 it says, "Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. You recall, brothers, our labor and hardship, how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behave towards you believers, just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging, imploring each one of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." Everybody was there learning about what that looks like to walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls us into that. And we were all there for each other to do that together, working and playing volleyball into the wee hours of the night and praying together. And we're going to have a couple of students come up here and kind of talk to you about how that impacted them, how they got to project, and the differences that, the difference that's made in their life already so far. So Scott, I'm going to have you come up first. This is Scott from Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Yeah, like you said, I'm Scott. I'm currently a sophomore at New Mexico State University in aerospace engineering. And so when I think of project, I think of the one verse that really comes to mind is Proverbs 16:9, for a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his step. A year ago at this point, I did not want to go to project. I was avidly opposed to going to project. But people in my life that had been to project kept telling me to fill out the application, fill out the application, fill out the application. It's not a commitment, just fill it out, and you are showing God that you are willing to allow him to be wherever you want. And so I was tired of people telling me that, so I filled out the application. And what I really wanted to do was an internship this summer, or this past summer, and so it came around February and still hadn't heard anything. And I was sort of like getting bummed because I hadn't heard anything and I didn't want to do project. And so I really came before God and I'm asking him, like, what do you want me to do with this summer? Like, because obviously it's not an internship, which were my plans. And so at that moment he said, I want you to go to project. And so at that point, you know, just within a week, I went from not wanting to go at all to really being excited to go and willing to go. And so, like, and, you know, as I progressed through the prep to get there, you know, I was able to see just the funds fly in, and just, you know, because I had the support raise. And so I was support raising, and just within a week I was at $1,300. And so I just was able to see God really show me that this is where I was supposed to be this summer. And looking back on it, you know, there was no better place I could have been. It changed my life, and I was out because of it. I now have a deeper trust in God, and a deeper desire to really know his will as I go through life, and really am a lot more sensitive to him telling me where I should go in my life. So, yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate that. All right, so one thing we wanted to do is announce to you the directors for this summer at Project, which we're really excited about. So Shane Vitsky, come on up here, Shane, is going to be the director of Project starting this summer. And he's got a lot of experience with Project and everything in the past. So he's going to tell you a little bit about logistics and introduce his staff for this summer.
Thanks, Robbie. I will not be alone this summer in Denver. With me will be my lovely wife, Heather Vitsky. Would you stand up? And we are fortunate enough to be working with a great family. So Dave and his wife, Crystal, Dave and Crystal Hughes, and their kids, McCade and Tegan. So we're excited to spend the summer with them. And McCade and Tegan, if you'll pass out those postcards, they're going to pass out some cards. It just gives you a brief summary of what Project is. It has a website address. You can go there for all the really hard black and white details, and we encourage you to do so. So what I wanted to do in the brief time I have with you is give you kind of a bare bones structure of what this summer might look like. Like Scott mentioned earlier, you live together during the day. You go out and you find a job. You work together. Well, some of you work together. Sometimes you work at different places, different hours. And part of it is you don't work, you don't stay. And that's one of the big things about Project. The first 2 weeks, if you don't have a job when you come up, you spend those first 2 weeks looking for a job and you put in applications. Some people work at internships for engineering companies. Other people get jobs turning fries at McDonald's. But what I've seen time and time again is God uses that to work in our hearts to show humility and show dependence and trust on the Lord to provide. And so even though that may sound like a big task and a big requirement, we fully expect God and are confident that God will provide for that. So during the summer, you work during the day, and every night is something different and something new. You live with the people that you're going to be with over the summer, your small groups. You pray together. You cook together. You study the Bible and see what the Lord has to say through that. You pray together. You're ministering to the people at your workplace and the people in the community around you. And that's That's essentially it. It's nothing new. It's nothing fancy. It's simple. Jesus has been doing it since he showed up on the earth. He invested his life in 12 guys for 3.5 years, and he's changed the world and turned it upside down. And we believe that we don't want to do anything new, anything different. We want to do that same thing today. So that's what we're striving for. And I think Scott said something that I would just want to reiterate. Project Impact is not a guarantee. You're not going to come back a changed person just because you go to Project Impact. People come back changed when they show up to the summer with a willing heart. And I've experienced it. That's where I met my wife, and he has used Project in our lives to move mountains in ways. So if you go into it with a willingness to see the Lord do some things and change things and to know him better than when you started, I think you're going to have a great summer. But if you go simply because people say, hey, you need to do this, and you do it because they badger you and pester you, sometimes it's God working at you, and later it gives way to that willingness. But if you just go and you say, well, I'm gonna grunt through this and do it begrudgingly, you're probably going to come out the same way you showed up. So that's not my desire or my prayer for any of you. But if you're willing and you're hungry to know the Lord better than when you started, we would love to have you and live alongside you and see what God has in store this summer. So thank you, guys. We're excited. We hope to have a lot of you there. So here you go, Robbie.
Thanks, Shane. Really appreciate that. All right, Stephanie, would you come up here and share a little bit of a story about her experience at Project?
Hi, guys. I'm Stephanie. I go to school at UNC, and I was actually the only one from UNC at Project this summer, and it was great. I got to make all new friends, so that was fun. But I kind of want to tell you about the most fun and most intense part about Project for me, which was getting my job. Like he was saying, you only have 2 weeks to look for your job. And I went in like, yeah, I can do this. I can find a job. You know, that's what I came here to do. And first week went by, filled out so many applications. It was ridiculous. But, so I kept going and going, and then week two comes by, and I was like, okay, this is kind of getting scary and hard, but I'll just keep trying. And Thursday or Wednesday night of week two, I still didn't have a job, and a little bit less than half of us didn't have a job. And so we started meeting every morning to pray together, and it was super exciting, you know, like getting up, we were encouraging each other. And I remember Thursday morning, I was like, okay, I have today and tomorrow to find a job. Like, honestly, I don't know how that's going to happen. And so I got up, rolled out of bed, went to prayer, and I remember being like, you know what, like, I'm tired of being afraid, like, I'm tired of, you know, giving up. And I just boldly, I was like, okay, God, like, I trust you. And I remember praying, and I was like, God, you know what, you're going to provide for me. Like, you sent me to Project Impact for a reason, and like, you have to provide for me. And so I was like, you know what, thank you. Thank you in advance for giving me the job that I'm going to receive sometime. And like, I'm serious. I went back to my room and I checked my phone, and I had a missed call from an unknown number. I called them back, and it was a place that I had applied to. The guy didn't give me any information. So I just went down there and I asked to speak to the boss, and the boss was like, oh yeah, hey, I remember getting your application. When can you start? I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. And so I got a job. And the coolest part about it too was it was a convenience store, and I've worked in a convenience store before, and it was easy. Like, anybody could work there, I think, anyways. But, so I, you know, I'm like doing my work and I'm doing a good job, and my boss really noticed, and he was like, wow, like, thanks. And, you know, it was so easy to have just been like, yeah, you know, I'm awesome. But I got to take that moment to just be like, no, like, I did this because, or I'm doing a good job because God provided this job for me, and because, like, this is my mission for the summer, you know, to be here. And like, he really got to see that I was an example of Christ, and it was probably the coolest thing ever. And like, it wasn't just this summer too. Like, I got to glorify God in the workplace, and I got to depend on him to give me a job. And like, that's carried through this semester. Like, I learned how to glorify God in my work, in my school work. And so yeah, it really was like a lasting summer, and the best use of my summer for sure. And I encourage anybody and everybody to go, because I went just going like, it's a summer, might as well, I don't have any plans. But God really changed my life, and I have so many friends now, if nothing else. So thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. Really appreciate that. Man, you hear all these stories. There's many more stories like Stephanie's and Scott's and everything. And probably for any reason you can think about not going to Project, I can guarantee you there's probably a testimony in this room that just like they had the same thing, they decided to go, and how just God provided and it melted away. And it's really exciting to see the way it is. And you step out, trust God, and it's really cool to see how he provides. That's part of Project right there, you know, the raising the money to go to do these different things, trusting God for a job, these different things. It really is just an important part of Project, and it's part of the way God uses it in your life in some amazing ways. So, okay, another thing that we're going to talk about, and that's going to be part of Project this summer, it's a brand new thing, and my dad actually wants to come up here and be kind of the first to announce this thing.
This is cool. Okay, pass those out. So, you know how sometimes people start new things? Right now, this is the official first time this has ever been mentioned publicly. Right now. So, we are starting a new thing called QJoy. QJoy International. It's a new program, and you're hearing it right now for the first time. It's something that God has put in the hearts of really our family. God gave us a couple of special needs kids in our family, in the Pruitt family. And so anyway, QJoy International, you're hearing it for the first time right now. We want to take the grace of God to the nations, to special needs individuals and their families in the nations. And there's going to be some parts of it. So here's the details. QJoy International, this is it.
Woo! So we're really excited about this new part of Project. So basically, and really as we're kind of thinking about this, the experience that we've had is like you kind of see, we really want to really bring hope and grace to people with special needs and their families all over the world. And really, that's something I think that is really needed when you see people with special needs and see their families and see the stress. The divorce rate is just so much higher for people who have special needs kids. And there's just so many needs in that way. And an illustration that I was thinking about was actually, and it just killed my heart when I heard this. But a little boy who my sister works with, he goes to one of these top premier autistic schools. So it's like top 10 in the country. One of the best that you can really get. He's got all the things, lives in Boulder, Colorado, where, you know, really pretty progressive. And there's a lot of like help for people with special needs. And there's, you know, they pass taxes and different things to try to help people. And this little boy, his father committed suicide this last fall. And it just kind of hit me deeply in this way that I was like, man, if that happens in Boulder, Colorado, where everything is like that. And, you know, the fact is that the stress and some of the pressure that he was feeling, I'm sure, contributed to his suicide. And it was just so tough to hear that. And I kept thinking, man, if this is the way that it is in Boulder, Colorado, I can't imagine what it's like, you know, in India, where the caste system is, and you don't even want to take your kids out, or some of these countries that it's almost like a curse, and they're trying to figure out how to get the curse removed from their family. And it just grieves my heart, and we want to bring hope and the grace of Jesus to these people. In my experience overseas, at an orphanage for people with special needs, was that of like, it was actually one of the most sad times I've ever had. Like, I went there, and there was just, there was still, even within this orphanage, there wasn't very much value of these kids. And it was just sort of preserving their life, and they're laying on the ground, and they didn't have any purpose. They didn't have anything. And it was just really hard and really sad for me. So QJoy is something that we really want to try to bring hope and bring grace and really ultimately bring the gospel to people who need it, both in the U.S., but ultimately like internationally is really what we want to do. So a little more of the details of what it's going to look like in Project this summer. Here's my sister, Bethany.
Hi. Thank you. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how you guys come into play with QJoy. So basically the plan is to have QJoy be a 2-summer commitment. The first summer, which is this summer, would be, you'd be full-time, just complete normal participants at Project Impact Denver. And, you'd have a full-time job working with children with special needs at Camp Paha. And Camp Paha is a camp for children with special needs and young adults. And, you'd be a camp counselor. You work 40 hours a week. And, you'd already be applied when you apply for Project, you'd apply for Camp Paha. So you'd already have that job in place. And you just get the experience in working with kids with autism, Down syndrome, so many different disabilities. And I got the opportunity to do this last summer, just volunteer, and it was awesome. Like, it was such a blessing. And basically, as a counselor, you would just go, you would have a group of your own, and you'd have a lot of other people working with you too. But you go from place to place, kind of like drama time, music, game time. You take the kids on outings into the community, swimming and to the zoo. And so, yeah, it's just a party really every day with kids and young adults with special needs. So it's a really, you would be blessed for sure by this job. And also, if this is one of those things that you're like a little hesitant, maybe you're interested, but you've never really had experience with people with special needs, like, this could be awesome training ground right here. That's the point of it. Also, it's a week off. Camp Paha is a week off from normal project dates, so you'd have to stay just 1 week later. But that also would give us a week on the front end where we can do some other training with you guys. And we have some awesome people that we've been trained by that can fill in and train you guys just in more of how to do that, so you guys would feel comfortable. Our hope is to have 6 to 8 participants this summer at Project Impact QJoy Track. And then the following summer, to summer 2015, well, we would send that team of students overseas. And you do training through Focus. You go through a week with Focus, which would be great. Basically, the partnership that we're looking at right now is in West Africa, in Ghana. That's kind of the best hope. That's where we're hoping it will end up, but we're not 100% sure. So after some traveling this spring and summer, we hopefully will know for sure where that overseas would be. But it would be working at a school with children who have autism in Ghana. And so that would also just be investing in these kids and loving on them and learning about how to work with children overseas who have special needs. And so, yeah, we're just in a big learning phase, and we'd love to use some of you guys to help us with that learning. And you know, we're just really excited to see where God takes us with this in the future. Because after a couple, also, while that team's overseas, we want to have another team with projects just going through that cycle. Always having a project team of QJoy and always having a focus team of QJoy. Just kind of seeing where God takes us from there, hopefully, and eventually developing some long-term partnerships overseas. So, yeah. Who's next? Oh, Whitney.
Hi, my name is Whitney Deason. I'm part of the Challenge in Boulder. CU is my college. Cool. Anyways, I'm just going to be telling you a little bit of how God has changed my heart towards special needs. So before I moved up to Boulder, special needs wasn't really a thought in my head. If it was, I was just kind of scared of them and avoided them. But then when I moved up to Boulder, there really wasn't avoiding it anymore, because I was living with the Pruitts, and they've got two special needs kids, and they are awesome. And it was just cool to see God change my heart. Just seeing the way that they love these kids and how precious these kids are and how much of a blessing they are. God pretty much did a 180 with my heart. And he put in this desire for me to start working with their kids. And so I did. I started working with them, and man, I just love those kids a lot. And even to the point where now I changed my major to have more of an emphasis with autistic children. And then God opened up a door for me and another girl to go overseas. And we got to see just how special needs is in some different countries. And man, it was, like Robbie said, it's rough. It's a rough sight, because there's not a lot there for them. So guys, I'm really excited about this QJoy thing. And I think God is going to do some awesome work with it. And I think that if you have any interest at all, that you should really talk to these guys, because, man, it's going to be a cool opportunity.
Thanks, Whitney. So really, you may be hearing some of these things, and you may just kind of have that kind of sense, a little tug on your heart. Maybe you know somebody who's had special needs, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just heard about that, or kind of maybe you just saw some of the pictures in the little kind of thing we handed out, the little flyer. You know, if that's what it is, come talk to us. We're going to kind of be hanging out here afterward. And really, you know, this is something we're excited about. And it's something that we want people to plan with the idea that they'd apply with this with the intent of spending two summers. It's not like set in stone. There's ways out if something were to happen or whatever. But that's the plan. We want people to really have this idea of that they want to spend a summer investing at Project, doing discipleship training, and also doing the QJoy stuff and everything, and then spending a summer investing some of those skills and things that you've learned overseas and just trying to pass that on and be a blessing and bring God's grace to the nations. And then kind of going back to Project as a whole, guys, maybe the QJoy thing didn't stick out to you, but you just kind of felt a little something like that towards Project. Maybe it's like, you know what you really want to do. You really want to, you know, go home and sort of get a job and watch a lot more TV than you probably should and do stuff like that. And we've all been there. We all know that. But I'll tell you guys, if you really choose to invest your summer and you really step out and you really do this, God will provide in ways that's beyond what you could imagine. And if you wonder and you have more questions about that, you know, there's a lot of people who stood up who've been here from Project before. Ask somebody you feel comfortable with from your ministry that you know that's been before. Or if you don't, you know, come talk to one of us. We're happy to do that. Any of us who were staff last summer, or if you want specifics, come talk to Shane, or Dave, about, you know, some of the specifics of Project this summer and what that's going to look like. But take this opportunity, guys. You don't have that many summers. You don't have that many opportunities to invest like this. But use these things to invest in yourself and your own personal growth and also learning how to invest in others, because it's a lifetime that this will be beneficial. It's worth your entire lifetime. So we just appreciate you guys being here. One more thing. I forgot to mention what QJoy stood for. So kind of before we wrap it up, QJoy, in case you're wondering, my little brother's name is Quinn. And then my little sister Alyssa's middle name is Joy. So we just put Q and Joy together, and we just kind of liked the way it sounded. And so eventually our website will be qjoy.org. We're still working on that. But yeah, so that's that. So again, if you have questions about QJoy or our project or anything like that, come find us. We'd be really excited to do that.
Okay. So I want to, there could be a little tiny bit of confusion, so I just want to make this crystal clear. First of all, QJoy is just a track. You'll be a regular Project Impact participant. But your job, which you actually get paid for too, would be if you're accepted at Camp Paha, working at Camp Paha. And that's just part of Project. But the greater thing is Project. And even greater than that, there are actually three Project Impacts, one in Kansas City, one in Denver, and one in Costa Mesa, California. So if you want life to be a beach for you, and you want to go out there, I directed that project 1 year, and it was fantastic. So you have other options besides the Denver project, but the QJoy deal is actually in the Denver project. So just to try to add clarity to all that. Okay? And we're done. So now part two of our time. Tim Heron, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. So my name's Tim Heron, and I'm on challenge staff at the University of Chico, which is in Northern California. And what I want to do is I want to take a little while to talk to you about gospel appointments. I know some of you guys have heard about gospel appointments. Maybe you've tried them. So I just want to share with you a little bit more about what they are, how we do them. So in order to do that, I want to show a video to just kind of get the ball rolling. So if we can just roll the video, then we'll get into really what is the gospel appointment.
The best midwave rider the world's ever seen.
In August of 2000, Hamilton took another giant leap by running a wave so treacherous and so outrageous that it affected the course of midwave surfing.
Who ever thought that a wave could suck so much water off the reef that a wave could be so powerful and cylindrical? The result is an extraordinary wave. Though while not as high as Piaffe, it's almost unfathomable in its mass, power, and ferocity. Chopu's reputation was already piercing, but neither Blair nor Derek Dorner could have imagined the once-in-a-lifetime wave that eventually appeared on our horizon.
I fell onto this wave. It was to the point where I almost said, don't let go of the rope when I looked back. fact be bombed. Structured collectively our entire perception of what was possible.
You go through a surf magazine, you've seen Christ, you've seen Off the Wall, you've seen White Man, you've seen everything, and none of it has any impact. But when that photo came out, it stopped everyone's heart, and they went, where and what is that?
I remember picking up that magazine, looking at that magazine, and just going, man, that's impossible. You don't do that.
Formerly, surfers are dragging this hand along the face. Blair can drag his right, his backhand, on the opposite side of his board to keep himself from getting sucked up in that hydraulic. You know, in the middle of that maelstrom, how did his mind say, this is what I have to do? No one had ever ridden as Laird rode on that wave before. And so it was the imagination of dealing with that unimaginable energy and coming up with the plan spontaneously. He couldn't practice.
I asked Laird, I said, Laird, why do you ride waves like this? Why do you risk your life riding waves like this? And he looked at me, this is a week after he did this, and he was kind of drained from the experience. He was very mellow, I think he was humbled by the experience. And he goes, Dad, I've trained my whole life for this. I didn't want to miss an opportunity like that.
I don't want to not live because of my fear of what could happen.
All right, so being from California, I figured it was only suitable to show a clip about surfing. Originally, though, however, I'm from Oklahoma, and we don't have surfing in Oklahoma. We have cows, a lot of cows, and a Sugar Bowl championship team right here. That's right. We are the only team to have conquered all five BCS titles, just throwing that out there. I'm a Sooner fan. I went to OU. Surfing's incredible. If you've never surfed, I'm learning how to surf. I've gone a couple times, and if you picked up on the video, you know, they're using these terms to describe this unimaginable power that comes from surfing. And if you've ever tried it, it's pretty scary. Okay, so I remember, you know, I was out there. It was one of the first or second times I was trying to surf. And I got out in the water. I had my surfboard with me. I was wearing my buddy's wetsuit, which was kind of weird because you don't wear anything under those. You just, and, you know, there's no bathrooms out there. But you just get over that. So I'm wearing my buddy's wetsuit. I'm out there. And I'm looking at this, like, ferocious two-foot wave coming in. And I'm thinking, this thing is going to kill me. And it did. Right, just to give you perspective, that was like a 100-foot wave. Right, I'm freaking out over 2 feet. I really think surfing is a lot like sharing the gospel because you're sitting there and you're looking at this massive body of water with unimaginable power coming at you. And it's not like you're going to get away from it. You have two options. You either jump on it, you ride it in, you duck dive underneath it and try not to get pulled away, or you just get smashed by it and rolled and your head usually gets smashed into the ground. Which is, I took option 3 most of the time. But surfing's a lot like sharing the gospel, and here's why. I think there's a couple things you have to have. First thing you really need to have is tools, right? To go surfing, there are things you need to have. You have to have a surfboard. You need to have a wetsuit. There's things that you need to have in order to do that. A second thing you need to have is skills. You actually have to know how to surf, you know? You actually have to be able to jump up on the board. That takes practice. You have to be able to know where on the wave, where is it coming? When is it going to peak? Because if you don't know where the peak's going to be at, you're either going to miss the wave completely or you're going to get pummeled. It takes skill. You have to be able to practice doing that. You don't learn to surf on the shore. Okay? You guys know that, right? You can't sit on the shoreline and learn how to surf. You only learn how to surf by getting out in the water. I think a lot of times sharing the gospel is the same way. The third thing you have to have is you have to have power, right? And the power comes from the power of the wave. And you can do the other two. You can do the skills, you can do the tools, but the power comes from the wave. If you don't have a wave, all you're doing is bobbing up and down. Sharing the gospel, I think, is the same way. We have to have tools. We have to have a way to communicate the gospel clearly in a way that makes sense to people. See, I think a lot of times we communicate the gospel, but we're communicating the gospel from this side of the bridge that we're already on. And we're over here saying to them, it's just like, it's just a little step. Just cross over. But what we don't understand is that they're over here, and it's like the Golden Gate Bridge to them. That is one long bridge, and I'm scared of heights. Okay? We got to learn to communicate the gospel in a way that makes sense to where they are in life. The second thing we need to have is skills. We have to be able to be able to do that without freaking out, or we got to do it without, you know, stumbling and panicking. We got to be able to do it like, this is what I'm about. This is my life. And it takes practice. And then the third thing, again, is you have to have power. You have to have power to share the gospel. And the power comes just like from the power of the wave. It's unimaginable, the power of the wave. And when we invite the power of God into sharing the gospel, we're not just inviting this little wimpy, you know, I don't know, like a little plug, an AV volt. We're talking about the power of a 100-foot wave coming in. And when we share the gospel, we're inviting God to move in people's lives. I love this verse in Isaiah 55:11. It says, "It is the same with my word. I send it out, and it always produces fruit. It will accomplish all I want it to, and it will prosper everywhere I send it." Guys, these are promises. These aren't just suggestions. Listen to, look at the promises. I send it out. It always produces fruit. It will accomplish what I want it to. It will prosper everywhere I send it. You see, when we share the gospel, regardless of what the outcome is, it produces fruit. It accomplishes what God wants to do. I think there's a couple reasons we really don't share the gospel. And I can really kind of narrow it down to two. I'm sure there's several, but I really think we can narrow it down to two. The first one's really what I just call the fear of man. Or really, you could just say the fear of being rejected. Okay, this is when we really, we kind of choose to place too much value in the things of the world instead of really what we believe God is calling us to do. What we do is we place value in what I call the three P's of the world. Okay? We place value in popularity, we place value in possessions, and we place value in pride. What happens is these three are in complete opposition to what the gospel is about. Right? Popularity says what? Look at me. The gospel says is look at Christ. Right? Possession says, look what I have, look at my things. The gospel says, look what I gave up for you. Pride says, look what I can do. Gospel says, look at what Jesus did. You see, when we place value in the things of the world, we place value in these three P's, we're never going to have a desire to share the gospel. Because when we share the gospel, it takes everything off of us and takes everything onto Christ. I love these verses. I'm sure some of you know them. Galatians 1:10, Paul says, obviously, I'm not trying to win the approval of people, but of God. If pleasing people were my goal, I would not be Christ's servant. John later in 1 John 2:16, he says, the world offers only a craving for physical pleasure, a craving for everything we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. These are not from the Father, but from the world. You see, we get scared about sharing the gospel because we start thinking, what if I step out and I try to share the gospel and they don't like it? Are you willing to risk your fear of losing your popularity for the sake of the gospel? Because if you're scared of not being popular, you're never going to share the gospel. Because you're allowing the fear of man to control you. The second one, and I think this is actually the one that most of us fall into, I'm going to call it a fear of adequacy. Really, it's a fear of not feeling prepared. Or, you know, to put it this way, you just fear that you're going to mess it up. You feel like you're going to get into a situation and you're like, I really want to do this, but I'm just not going to do it well. And I'm gonna shame the gospel and I'm gonna mess it up and they're gonna walk away more confused and they're gonna hate God because I tried to share the gospel with them. It's not that we don't want to share the gospel. It's not that we lack passion to share the gospel. It's that we kind of lack the tools to feel equipped to share the gospel, right? And I think we all know what it means to not feel equipped and prepared, right? Are any of you guys in here like musicians or, you know, performers or ballerinas or anything like that? Anything that you've ever had to do an audition for, right? Any of you guys like that? Okay, the nervousness you feel before an audition, right? Versus the confidence that you're going to nail it, right? We know what it feels like to not be adequately prepared. Guys, how about this? The doubt you face before taking a big test, you know you didn't really study enough for it. And you kind of do one of those like, God, if you just help me, I promise I will read the chapter next time. Right? It's the fear that holds you back from taking risks versus the courage to do what's right. Guys, okay? Guys, it's that wimp in you that keeps you from asking the girl out because you don't feel like you can pull it off. Right? We all know what it feels like to not be adequately prepared. But here, I want to challenge you with this thought. When you feel prepared, the fear of popularity, the fear of being rejected fades away. When you feel like you have the confidence to go in there and do it, you no longer fear what they're going to feel. You no longer fear what they're going to say because you're confident. Now, there's a story in the Bible. Some of you guys might have heard it. It's called David and Goliath. If you want to talk about a man in the Bible that had reason to fear man, I think it would be this little shepherd boy named David being asked to take on a giant named Goliath. Think about this. He's coming into the situation and no one's taking on this guy right now. This is a giant fear, right? And, you know, and he's thinking, I'm going to go do this. But, oh, man, what are they going to think about me? I mean, I'm just this wimp. I'm not even in the army. My brothers even hate me. I can't even wear the armor. They're just going to think I'm a wimp. There's no way that I could do this. But instead, he had a skill. What was his skill? A sling and a stone. And he was very confident in that skill, right? And he went out to face battle with Goliath. And he was able to use the confidence and the skill that he had to defeat the greatest fear facing the entire army. When you feel equipped, when you feel prepared, the fear of man, the fear of rejection fades away. What I want to do for the rest of our time is I want to talk about what these gospel appointments are. We've been talking about gospel appointments for a couple of years now, and I want to share with you kind of what they are, how we do them. And then if you guys are interested in this, I really want to encourage you to come to the workshop tomorrow. In the workshop, we're really going to just dive through how I would initiate the gospel appointment, how I go through the entire appointment, and then how I help lead people to Christ. We've been doing gospel appointments for about 4 years now at Chico State, and we have seen over 200 people accept Christ. That's impressive, guys. God is moving in the lives of college students. And God has been using the gospel appointment. So what is it? What is this gospel appointment? It's simply a time that you set up with someone to share your testimony and the gospel in a clear and friendly way. That's all that it is. The gospel appointment, you can set up with just about anybody. You can set it up with your friends. You can set it up with an acquaintance. You can really set it up with someone you meet for the first time. If you feel the Spirit of God moving, you can just move and try to set up an appointment. What I love about gospel appointments, guys, is it allows you to discover where someone is spiritually. Okay? Everyone is on a spiritual journey. And what the appointment does is it allows you to discover where they are on that journey. And then it allows you to say, okay, you're there. I'm coming to you now. And now let's walk forward. Let's answer questions. Let's dive into this. The reason that you're meeting together is to talk about spiritual things. You don't have to do it. And you guys have known this, right? You're in a conversation with somebody and, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, man, I really want to tell this guy about Jesus, but I have no idea how to do that. But you're sitting there and you're just like, okay, I'm just going to look for an opportunity. And maybe you get talking about movies and, you know, and this guy starts talking about the latest superhero movie. There's about one every week that comes out. So you're just talking about the latest superhero movie and you think, oh, this is my chance. You know who my favorite hero is? Jesus. You met him? Right? You do this really awkward, you know, like trying to transition into the gospel thing. What I love about the appointment is they know and you know you're there to talk about spiritual things. So they're already coming to the meeting excited about it. They've already got questions for you. The other thing about gospel appointments are is they're printed out. You don't have to memorize a presentation. I'm not very good with memorization, okay? I'm really good at memorizing small things and usually pictures. The great thing about it is it's printed out there right in front of you. You're not having to sit there, okay, I've got to quote this verse perfectly. Okay, what was point two? Point two was, man, I forgot what it was. It's printed out right there in front of you. You just walk through it. You get to read through it. Another thing about it is it's something in front of you that you can look at and something that they can look at. Really what that does is it does two things. One, you don't have to keep awkward eye contact with them the whole time. You know what I mean? Girls, you ever been on a date with a guy that you weren't really into and you're sitting there like, I have to keep looking at this guy. That's nice over there. You know, what the gospel appointment does is it kind of gives you an opportunity to kind of like take a breather. And you're like, okay, look at this. And you're kind of like, okay, I can do this. And you get back into it. Gospel appointments are incredibly simple and helpful to use. So who do you set gospel appointments up with? Okay, this is a simple question. Who do you set gospel appointments up with? The people around you. See, I think sometimes when we share the gospel, we're very excited with sharing the gospel that don't live near us. You know, we'll go across the street, or if some of you guys live in dorms, you say, I'm going to go to that dorm over there and share the gospel because they don't know me as well. But here's the thing. The gospel is for people, for us to share with that are next to us, the people that we do life with. You see, we get scared when we think about sharing the gospel with people that live next to us in our apartment complexes. Why? Because if it doesn't go well, you have to see them the next day. And then you do the whole awkward, like, jump out of your car and run into the house and close the door before they see you thing. But this is the thing, is God has put people in your life so that you can share the gospel with them. Matthew, also known as Levi, throws a party for his fellow tax collectors to introduce them to Jesus. And I love this verse, Luke 5:29. Says this, later Levi held a banquet in his home with Jesus as the guest of honor. And many of Levi's fellow tax collectors and other guests also ate with them. And this is what I love. You see, Levi's first interaction with sharing the gospel wasn't with people that were far from him, but they were with people that he did life with day in and day out. So here's my challenge. I want to ask you this. Who are the people that you do life with every day? Can you come up with right now a list of three people that need to hear the gospel that you do life with? Can you do that? Do you have three people in your life that do not know Jesus that you do life with? Maybe they live next to you in your apartment complex. Maybe they're in your class. Maybe they're next to you in your dorm. I'm just going to answer this question for you. The reason they're in your life is so that you can introduce them to Jesus. That is why they are there. If you don't introduce them to Jesus, who's going to do it? People are going to hell because we are not taking this commandment seriously. Okay, guys, I live in a cul-de-sac right now, and I love the cul-de-sac because the cul-de-sac's like a family. And every single family on this cul-de-sac has children. So what that means is your front yard is not your own. Every day I have children running across my yard, leaving their bikes, and their dogs leave other things. And you know what? It's okay. But across from me was Drew. Drew's my next door neighbor over here. Across from me is a guy named Josh and Tanya. They just moved in a couple weeks ago. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I got to get to meet these guys. How am I going to do this? Well, I just bought a desk. Being a smart person I was, I didn't measure the width of my doorway before I bought the desk. And I just bought the desk because it was cheap. It was on Craigslist. It's awesome. It's huge. I feel more productive with a big desk. And I'm sitting here, and we're trying to get this desk down the hallway, and it doesn't fit. And I'm like, how are we going to do this? So I measured the desk. And then I measured my window, and I realized my window was 31 by 31, and my desk was 30 by 30. Oh, yeah. So what did I do? I called Josh over. I never met him before. I walked over and says, hi, I'm your neighbor, Tim. Can you help me with something? I need to get a desk in through a window. So we did it, and that was how Josh and I began our relationship. He just bought his children guitars for Christmas, and he asked me if I could tune them. You see, a relationship has started here. And the reason is because I believe God is pursuing them. So we invited them to church. Amy made fudge for them for Christmas. We gave half of it to them. Half of it made it to them. And we got to invite them to church. And here's what they said. We've been looking for a place to go, but we just didn't know where. And we felt like we didn't know anybody. And I looked at it and says, well, you know us, right? You see, God is putting people in your life to share the gospel with. So how do you set up these gospel appointments? We're talking about gospel appointments. How do you set these things up? Some of you might know this about me, but I'm an introvert by nature and a melancholy phlegmatic, if that means anything to you. Basically, what that means is, when it comes to sharing the gospel, which in most cases is talking to someone I don't know very well, trying to communicate a message to them that they're probably not going to like. To a melancholy, phlegmatic introvert, basically that's about the scariest thing you could ever ask them to do. I mean, it terrifies me. Like, I don't know you, and you might hate me after this. That's not fun. Right? But like we talked about before, when you feel prepared and equipped, what happens to the fear? It evaporates. How do you set up these gospel appointments? Now, I'm going to give you a couple of tips. And these might seem really elementary to you, but that's good because that means you can do them, right? The first thing is this. I know this is science here. Start a conversation with them, okay? Who cares? If they're on campus, walk up to them. Say hi. If they're at your challenge meeting or your campus ventures meeting, awesome. They're already interested in spiritual things. because they're there. Go up and talk to them. Start a conversation. We use the acrostic FIRE a lot of times. Some of you guys might know that. Find common ground with them. Talk about their interests. Talk about their relationships. And then you want to start trying to find some experiences with spiritual things. Now, this can happen in 5 minutes with them. This could take an entire semester. But the idea of this is you want to start having conversations with them. What happens, though, is we get into our little clump, you know, our clusters, right? And we kind of just want to hang out with our buddies. And we're not realizing that new people are coming around us. Right? At Challenge, we kind of have a 10-minute rule before and after Challenge. Basically, like, you're not allowed to talk to your friends. Right? We want to make sure that every single person that comes to Challenge at Chico either walks away with a gospel appointment already set up, or we get their phone number so that we can text them and set one up. Every single person that comes to Challenge will have the gospel shared with them. That is our goal. Well, how do we do that? We start by having conversations. We use boomerang questions. And I call this boomerang questions. These are questions that if you throw it out there, they're going to throw it back. Questions like, what's your major? Right? You ever got that question? Hey, what's your major? Oh, it's fishing. What's your major? Oh, it's botany. You know, I don't know. Right? You throw it out there and they're going to throw it right back to you. What are you majoring? How many siblings do you have? What do you like to do for fun? What happens is as you get into a conversation, you get to discover things about them. So just start a conversation. The second thing you want to do is begin to identify with Christ early. Okay, a lot of times we kind of wait on this one. We want to wait until that opportune moment. Guys, here's the thing. People don't care if you tell them you're a Christian. They don't care if you tell them you're involved with a club called Christian Challenge. That's fine. Just get over that. A lot of times I just say things like this. I'll be on campus. I'll be meeting with somebody. I'll meet them for the first time. I just say something like, hey, have you ever heard about Challenge? Fortunately, there's a group at Chico State called Adventure Outings, and their tagline is Challenge. So they're always coming up to us asking us like about the high ropes courses. Yeah. I always say something along those lines like, you know, I got a major high ropes course called Heaven. You want to try to get there with me? No. You know, so a lot of times people are coming up to us asking about Challenge, and we just say, no, that's not us, but hey, do you know what we're about? And they say, no, what is this? And we just say, well, we're a Christian group on campus. You see, we just identify with Christ early. Have a conversation, people. Identify with Christ. The third thing we want to do is explore where they're at spiritually. My favorite way to do this is I'll just be talking with someone. I identify that I'm with Challenge. Identify with them that I go to church. And I just say this. I just say, hey. Hey, did you ever grow up going to church or anything like this before? A lot of times you're like, oh yeah, you know, I used to go to church a little bit back home. Or it's like, yeah, I was kind of involved in this club back in my other college. And you see, what I'm doing is we're just exploring where they're at. Now, if they whip out the bridge and share it with me, then I got a pretty good idea that they've been trained somewhere. You know, but a lot of people are just like, oh yeah, I've been to something like that once or twice. You see, you just want to explore where they're at. And then the fourth thing you want to do is just try to set up a meeting with them. Now, this is where it gets kind of scary because you're thinking, how do I do that? And this is my go-to line. I really only ask people to go to gospel appointments one way. It's just what I say every time. I've never tried to find a second way to do it because they all say yes to this one. And I just say, hey, man, it was great to get to know you. You'd like to get together sometime to get lunch or coffee or something? I can tell you more about what our group's about. It's that easy. That's all I say. Hey, it was great getting to meet you. Hey, you want to get together tomorrow sometime? And I'll buy you coffee. I bribe them. That gets expensive sometimes. They're over here ordering like the $10 drinks. They're like, what do you want? It's like, I want a small coffee. Right? Can you give me the cheapest thing on the menu? Hey, you want to get together sometime? I can tell you more about what our group's about. Or, you know, if they're confused about Christianity or they say, yeah, but I really don't know what it means to be a Christian. You know, I've actually been told that. Yeah, but I don't really know what that means. I'm like, well, hey, you want to get together sometime? I could in 20 minutes, because people value their time in college because they have to go back and play video games. I say, hey, in 20 minutes, I can tell you what the Bible means or what the Bible says about what it means to be a Christian. You want to get together sometime and I can tell you about it? I'll even buy you the coffee. And a lot of times they're like, yeah, man, and as I'm saying it, I've already got my phone out and I'm already plugging in numbers. I'm like, hey, what's your number? I'll text you. See, they feel obligated now because I've got my phone out, you know. They're like, oh, well, you took your phone out. I guess I'll give you my number. And while I'm at it, I usually ask them for credit card numbers, social security numbers, things like that. See, here's the thing. This is why the gospel appointment works so well in college. College is a recruitment culture, okay? We want to bank on that. You see, the first couple weeks of every semester, every single group on campus is trying to get them. So why aren't we? It's a recruitment culture. It's not weird in college to say, hey, you want to get together? Hey, do you want to come to our group? Hey, what's your phone number? you just gave your number to like 50 groups on campus. I mean, you're going to have so much spam mail, you're not going to know what to do with it. So just ask for their phone number. If nothing else, get their phone number. Then you can text them and say, hey, it was great to get to know you. You want to grab coffee or lunch sometime? We actually created at Chico, we created a how-to list. And we have every single like encounter that you can imagine, like how to invite someone to challenge on Facebook, how to invite someone to challenge over a text message, you know, how to set up a gospel appointment over a text message, how to set up a gospel appointment with someone that you've never met before. We actually have an entire how-to list where all you have to do is plug their name in and send the text message. Why? Because in the moment you're like, I don't know what to do. Well, it's great. Here's the manual. Just type it in and send it. If anyone wants it, I've brought copies. That's right. Yeah, we're here to make it easy. We're about setting up the gospel meetings. And I love this verse in Luke 12:12. It says this, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very time what needs to be said. And this is what I love about this verse. I feel like God is saying, look, Tim, if you are faithful to set up the meeting, I'll be faithful to help you with the wording. Just try to get it out there. I actually really love doing gospel appointments. So let's say this. Say you set up a gospel appointment. You get your first gospel appointment. You are stoked. You've got the lesson. You're ready to go. And you're thinking, what do I do now? Real quick, here's how you do it. Number one, pray. Remember the wave? Remember the illustration of the wave, right? The wave is the power. If you're not praying, you're not inviting the power of God into the gospel appointment. You see, God knows that you just set up a gospel appointment, so does Satan, and he's going to bring everything he can to keep that meeting from happening. So you begin to pray. Number two, confirm the appointment. Okay? I mean, it's in a meeting. So I just text guys, you know, an hour or two before. It's like, hey, man, we still up for meeting today? A lot of times they're like, yeah, man, I'm up. Let's do it. Right? Just confirm it. Make sure that they're still ready to hang out. Number three, buy them a drink. This is an investment. Buy them a cup of coffee. I think it's the best couple bucks you've ever spent. Number four, here's where it starts getting good. You want to hear their story. And a lot of times, and the way I do that, so I'm sitting down with a guy. I'm in a coffee shop. You know, I bought his, you know, $10 drink. I bought my coffee. His has got foam and sprinkles on it. Right, mine's black. And, because I couldn't afford the cream. Right, no. You know, we're sitting there. I'm just like, hey, man, so, like, you know, what's your story? I just say that. I'm just like, you know, how'd you get here? And I just start listening to them. And here's what I'm doing. As they're telling their story, I'm listening for things that their story have in common with mine. Right? I'm listening. You know, I grew up without a dad. So I never had a dad growing up. I was involved with music, so I have that. So a lot of times guys are talking, they're saying things like, yeah, man, I never had a dad growing up. So I think that, okay, good. That's something that I can connect with them. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to connect with them so that they see that what my story is and what my life is it, their story can have a part of that. So you just want to hear their story and, you know, just let them talk. You know, sometimes they talk for a long time. That's okay. Because you're wanting to get to know them. People feel loved when you listen to them. So hear their story. The next thing you want to do is you want to tell your story. And this is where you bring out the things that you had in common. Right? If a guy said, yeah, I grew up in a band and I did this and that. I was like, yeah, man, I was involved in music too and I did this. And you know, but really what changed my life is when I got involved in church. And then I started bringing my testimony into it. So I'm listening to their story. I'm listening for things that they have in common. And then I bring that out in my story. The sixth thing you want to do is this, is you want to start to share God's story. And this is where the gospel appointment comes in. And a lot of times what I say is like, hey man, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, sharing with you what it really means to be a Christian. You know, if you got 20 minutes, I can walk you through what it means to be a Christian. It might help answer some questions. And a lot of times it's just like, yeah man, I just pull it out. I already have it with me. And I just start to go through. And here's, this is the gospel appointment. What it does is it takes them through them starting to realize where they are and their need for Christ. And what we do is we start off with an essential question. And this is the question. This question is what helps you realize where they are spiritually. And the question is this. We just ask them, is like, you know, if you were to die tonight, a lot of times I make a joke. I'm like, you know, there's a hot dog stand outside and you get hit by it. And the guy's rushing off and you get hit and you die. That's a terrible way to die. Death by hot dogs. Let's say that you stand before heaven and God says, why should I let you into heaven? What would you say? And a lot of times they would sit there and it's like, well, man, I'd say that I was probably a good person. I try to make good choices. See, what right there that tells me where they are spiritually. The second question we ask them is like, hey, you know, if you had a percentage chance of getting to heaven, what would you give you? And a lot of times they're like, oh man, you're 40%. So what I do is I just write that number down. All right, 40%. I just go on. And we start there. And what we do is we walk through this lesson. And then by the time we get to the lesson, It's an opportunity to accept Christ. And that's really the seventh part here, is to give them an opportunity to accept Christ. And I know that I didn't go through what the gospel appointment looks like. We're going to do that tomorrow in the workshop. I really want to encourage you to come to that. I'm going to walk through it just like I would with somebody. You're just going to be like flies on the wall. And you'll just see exactly what I do. At the end of the gospel appointment, you give them an opportunity to accept Christ. And what I love about the end of this, there's a prayer. And a lot of times what I do is I'll sit there and say, hey, read this. Does this express kind of where your heart's desire is right now? And a lot of times they'll read it and they say, man, that's right where my heart's at. I need this right now. A quick story. So I had a gospel appointment with a guy named Adam one time. And Adam, he was a freshman guy. And we're sitting in this coffee shop. So you can imagine, you know, picture a coffee shop, you know, little round tables, lots of people being quiet, right? You have to remember that, quiet. They're being quiet, reading books and studying and drinking coffee. And I'm walking through the gospel appointment with Adam. And as I'm going through the gospel appointment, you could just see God. Like, I mean, it was just like God and Adam were coming close. And you could just tell it on his face. And I get to the end of the lesson. I say, Adam, does this prayer express where your heart's desire is? He said, yeah, it does. And I said, would you like to pray this prayer and invite Jesus into your life? And he says, yeah, I do. And I say, well, do you want to do that now? He's like, yeah, I do. He's getting excited. That should have been my clue. So I said, well, how about this? How about I say a line and then you repeat it after me? He's like, okay. And I say, you know, so I'm just like, I'll read it, then you can repeat it. And he goes, okay. And so I said, dear God, I know that I'm a sinner. Remember, coffee shop, quiet, small tables. Adam goes, dear God, I know that I'm a sinner. And I mean, it's just like, oh boy. Adam's going to tell the whole coffee shop how to pray to receive Jesus. And we did the whole prayer like that. Everyone's looking up. They're looking over at us. I'm like, hey, sorry. Jesus moment. That was one awkward moment for me. But here's the great thing. Awkward moments change lives. And guess what? He's been a Christian now for 3 days. This man started having a quiet time the very next day. And he's still doing them every single day. He had more consistent quiet times than I did. That was humbling. Right? Awkward moments change lives. One more story and I'll wrap up. Well, what if you share the gospel with somebody and you go through this gospel appointment and you think, man, they didn't accept Christ. What do I do? I had a guy named John. We went through the gospel appointment. And here's the thing about John. As I was getting to know John has had three dads. And every single one of them were crack addicts. So when it came to giving his life to another man, Jesus, he was a little hesitant at first. And I was okay with that. And I told him, I was like, well, John, this is what it means to become a Christian. And I just wanted you to know that. And then guess what I said next? I said, hey, you want to hang out sometime? And we just hung out again. And for like 3 months, we would just hang out. I never brought it up. And every once in a while, I just start saying, hey, remember that gospel thing we went through? You know, where are you with that? And he's like, you know, I've been thinking about that. I'm like, well, where are you? He's like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it could be true. I was like, man, that's good. I'm glad you're there. And then we just go on, and a couple months would go by. And then I bring it up again and say, hey, John, hey, remember that gospel thing we went over with a couple months ago? He's like, yeah. I was like, where are you with that? And he's like, you know, I've been thinking about that more. You know, I'm not there yet, but I think I might. One day I'm in the coffee shop. You realize I go to coffee shops a lot. I go to multiple coffee shops. I'm not like one weird guy. They do know me in multiple coffee shops, so I'm sitting there. I'm at the coffee shop and John comes up to me. I didn't text him anything. He just saw me and came over and he looked at me and said, hey, I want to tell you something. I was like, okay. Sat down and says, kind of looked a little shy, kind of looked down at me, but then he looked up and he says, I asked for forgiveness last night. All on his own. John met Jesus. I didn't even get to be there. I was actually kind of upset. Yeah. There's a verse in 1 Corinthians 3:6 that says this, I planted the seed in your hearts and Apollos watered it, but it was God who made it grow. Notice that God is the one that does the watering, the growing, right? But we do the planting and we do the watering. And I'm trying to grow a garden in my backyard right now. I also have raccoons, so you can imagine the pests problems that I have right now. But here's the thing, when you try to grow a garden, you have to water those plants like every day. Like a lot of water, like a long time. And some of these plants take like an entire season of watering before we start seeing fruit. And here's the thing. When it comes to the gospel appointment, sometimes you just have to keep sharing with them and loving them and walking with them. But here's the thing. You never know when they're going to accept Jesus. But that's what I love about the gospel appointment. It gives them the truth of the gospel. So I hope that's encouraged you. If any of this is you know, you want to get more into this, just come to the workshop tomorrow and we'll walk more through that. So I'm going to pray for you guys. And then I don't know where this is going next. So whoever is coming up, just come up while I pray. God, I thank you so much just for what you're about and what you're doing. And Lord, I just pray that you would continue to use gospel appointments to help people come to know you. And Jesus, I just pray that in this room right now, every single person in this room will get to lead one more person to Christ by this time next year. And God, that this room would be double. God, we thank you so much that you're in our lives and that you want to use the gospel to change lives. And we pray this in your name. Amen.
Copyright by the Navigators, 2014. All rights reserved.